You're tuned in to the HR Bandit podcast, your one-way ticket to the latest and craziest in the world of work. In partnership with Timber Media, Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.
Hey, hey, welcome to HR Bandit, the podcast where we cover the top news from the world of work every single month. I'm your host, Ankita.
And I'm Apoorva. And we have a really action-packed episode ready for you. But before I break the suspense, Ankita, I really want to know how much pasta did you consume last week?
Does it show on my face, Apoorva? Is that what you're asking?
I dare not. I have to still continue working on this podcast with you.
August will be my big diet month, but bigoli, tagliatelle, tortellini, spaghetti, lasagna, yes, I've had them all. And I will get those calories out, don't worry. But tell me, how did being a tourist in your own city go? Did you discover anything new?
You know, not sure about tourist spots, but I did discover something new. I finally rode the driverless Waymo and I absolutely loved it. My parents loved it too. Like, it is one of their highlights of the trip. And I think I could really get used to driverless cars. Anyway, after that Pasta 101 and all about Waymo, let's jump right into our episode for today. So just when I thought that my AI vocab was down the Gen AI and Agentic AI, Sam Altman dropped another bombshell. He declared that his company is a lot of things now, but before anything else, we are a super intelligence company.
Yeah, the word super intelligence seems to be everywhere right now. You know, the whole AI systems that could potentially outsmart humans in every possible way. It does make my head spin a little bit. I don't know what the future will look like with super intelligence. But hopefully we'll wrap our heads around it just as we have with Gen AI, Agentic AI and everything else.
Yeah, here's hoping to. Anyway, let's break the suspense. Here are our top three headlines from July. First up, Soham Parekh, an engineer from Mumbai, made headlines when he sat down across the table at a podcast confessing to holding four jobs at once. We don't know if it was enough to scare Jamie Dimon, but Goldman is now asking its analyst to swear that they don't have private equity jobs lined up. Second, you may now need to start using Gen AI at work and effectively at that to get promoted in the top software companies. And lastly, why investors in Silicon Valley are worried about a dangerous precedent set by Windsurf, an AI coding company. So bandits, buckle up as this one's going to be a really interesting one. Ankita, let's go.
Yeah. Now the protagonist of our first story is Soham Parekh. Now he's a Mumbai-based engineer who achieved internet fame at working for four tech startups at the same time, clocking over 140 hours per week. Now, as expected with most things these days, the internet found itself divided into two sides. One side used this as a case study to change the norm for holding just one job at a time, encouraging organizations to employ high caliber candidates while allowing them to work at multiple organizations. The other side held a more traditional view and cited this as the biggest con in recent times. Now, Soham Parekh has worked 19 jobs over the past 4 years, holding multiple tech jobs at once. Our latest news all began with a tweet that got 20 million views. I quote, PSA, there's a guy named Soham Parekh in India who works 3 to 4 startups at the same time. He's been preying on YC companies and more. Beware. Very soon after this tweet came another one. Holy shit, we hired this guy a week ago, fired him this morning. He did so incredibly well in interviews, must have a lot of training, careful out there. Now, these are just two of the tweets and so many more followed, so much so that there was a Soham Tracker, a website that went live very soon after. Now, Apoorva, I think I can guess which side of the internet you will fall into, but I'll let you share it.
So once hired, Soham's performance used to tank. He would deliver slow, subpar work and make up a laundry list of excuses from drone strikes, yes, drone strikes and floods to internet outages and geopolitical conflict, most of which didn't really check out. One founder even said that he interviewed 50 people and Soham was by far the best. But the moment the real work began, it all unraveled. Eventually, so many people came forward that someone actually created a website called the Soham Tracker to crowdsource warnings. Now, here's my take. What Soham was doing wasn't side hustling. In my view, it is flat out unethical. Because when you enter into an employment contract with a company, you are bound by the clauses in that contract, and which means you cannot be working with a competitor or you cannot be sharing proprietary information that you may have access to. He violated company policies, he broke signed contract, misled employers, and knowingly took advantage of the system. So in my view, what's wrong is wrong, despite whatever be the reason that forced Soham to do so. But under this headline grabbing case, I do think there's a bigger conversations for HR teams here. People do want to do side hustles now. Side hustles are different from holding multiple employments at once. So people typically want to do side hustles for various reasons. It could be for generating more income, to explore passion projects, or just to gain more skills. And that's valid. Companies need to stop pretending that it's not happening and instead create like really clear, thoughtful guardrails, require disclosure to prevent conflict of interest and protect their IP. However, they need to still enable employees to pursue meaningful work outside their 9-to-5 if they choose to. I mean, look at us. We are running this podcast. It's technically not side hustling though, because we are not really making money. But we are doing something outside of our day jobs that we're really passionate about. And imagine if we were told, hey, this is something you can't do. So while Soham's story is a cautionary tale, not really about the dangers of side hustles, but about what happens when there's no trust, no structure, and no transparency.
I think the term side hustling is misleading to think that there's only one main hustle and everything else is a side hustle. I think organizations need to think differently, because I see no reason why there can't be two main hustles, right? Like, why does one have to be primary and another one secondary? And Soham's case is one reason to bring this conversation to the fore. I think organizations, if we are getting more productive with AI and everything else, and if we are moving to a four-day work, we don't need to sign away 40 hours of our life with an organization, especially from 9-to-5. We may be signing 30 hours at a maybe 7-to-3 p.m. and then we sign another contract, which is another 30 hours, which is 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. maybe. And I think we have to analyze why people are looking for multiple. Well, it could be because they want multiple sources of income. It could be because they're not passionate about one thing or passionate about multiple things. I just think today the structure does not exist. If Soham is working 140 hours per week, which is what he's come out to share, if he does that while holding 2-3 jobs, now, of course, he wasn't doing his job well, but if he was doing his job well, there's a whole different conversation to say, hey, like if he said, I hold 2 other jobs, are you still willing to hire me? And if he was really the exceptional candidate, they should change their archaic mental models and be like, yeah, sure, if you can do what we want you to do and there is no stealing and reselling of data or something like that, sure, go ahead and do it. And I think that's the side of the internet that I fall into. I do think he has sparked a conversation that I hopefully does, that doesn't die this month and next month, and that we keep continuing to say, hey, how do we actually make multiple main hustles happen for people?
Yeah, I do think there is a lot more nuance to that though, right? It's not as simple as allowing any and every employee to be able to do or hold multiple jobs, right? Imagine we are seeing this war for AI talent, for example. Now, imagine if someone's hiring a really specialized AI person. You can't have him to be able to gain competitive advantage. You can't have that person be working for multiple companies. So I do think what you're saying is possible, Ankita, but there's more nuance to it. Probably it's possible only for certain levels or certain kinds of roles. But I'm yet to come across a company that's thinking in that direction. I do remember though, back in 2022, there was a huge debate in India when there's a company there by the name of Swiggy. They launched a very official moonlighting policy, where they actually enabled or gave ways for employees to do something else outside of their usual work hours. That's the only one I can think of. But yeah, I'm yet to come across like a large organization trying to do something like what you just mentioned.
I know, because you and I are going to get into big trouble if we do start making money via this podcast. But someday, I hope that that's possible, that we can actually hold our day job and do a podcast which is in the field of our work and then make money off it. But until then, we'll keep an eye on this evolution, and Bandits, we'll let you know if we actually get to a place where we can hold multiple main hustles. Maybe there is some conflict of interest, or maybe there is no conflict of interest. But yeah, that's the future I would love to live in.
I agree to that. Now, on that note, let me take us to our second story. A major but unsurprising shift in how tech companies are evaluating talent. AI proficiency isn't just a nice to have anymore. It's becoming mandatory for career growth. Microsoft made news by explicitly requiring AI skills for performance reviews and promotions. Microsoft introduced this policy in July 2025 by formally mandating the use of AI tools across its workforce and critically tying this AI adoption to performance evaluations. Essentially, employees are now expected to integrate AI into their workflows, and their main performance ratings will reflect their proficiency and usage. While details on implementation remain light, the move underscores a broader shift towards embedding AI capabilities into the core expectations for staff across the company. And Microsoft isn't alone in this. Shopify now requires managers to prove AI can't do a job before making a new hire, while Duolingo factors AI adoption into promotion decisions, reflecting a broader trend of embedding AI use into work expectations.
Two isolated cases. A lot of organizations have enabled their software engineers to experiment with AI tools. Uber, Shopify, like you mentioned, Volkswagen have already adopted Copilot, and a whole bunch of other organizations are Claude users. And these are like more recent adopters, right? Companies like Freshwork, Redfin, and Aquilon, they adopted Copilot in 2023. So like, if Copilot has existed for 3 years and has been available to employees at Microsoft and they've not been using it, I think it's only natural to say, hey, like, now you're performance is going to be related to these tools and how you're using them. And I think I'm not very surprised by this move. It's like, hey, you don't know Microsoft Excel and you're using an age-old calculator to do all of this. Maybe it becomes a mandatory requirement for your jobs. And it's not just promotions. I was reading a report that said that Meta is now allowing candidates to use AI in coding reviews and tests. In a memo that was sent out, they literally said that this is more representative of the developer environment that our future employees will work in, and they have people volunteering for a mock AI enabled interview. So I do think if you're not using AI right now, you're not only going to maybe miss out on promotions and great ratings, but you'll also miss out in the competition for these coveted jobs that people who use AI will probably get.
Yeah, that's there. But there are a couple of things that come to my mind on this topic. One is, what are these organizations doing to enable employees to be able to use these AI tools to the best effect? There is little around it in the different stories that we hear. It feels like employees are being left to fend for themselves, to upskill themselves on AI. Now, while there's nothing wrong with that, because it allows organizations to move faster, but I do think if it does require a shift, it does require a one-time investment to be able to learn these tools quite effectively, and organizations need to do more there. The second is, before tying AI usage to evaluation, I also want to know more about what is the efficacy of using these AI tools. So I read a recent study which found that experienced developers using tools like Cursor Pro and Claude actually took 19% longer to complete tasks on familiar code bases, despite believing they would speed up by 20%. So, and that's a pretty detailed study. There's a lot, it goes into what were the different reasons that led to this drop, which also included like people using their free time to just do something else, or context switching leading to reduced productivity. However, it does suggest that there's a lag time to learn these AI tools before it actually translates into real productivity gains, which is not something we are talking much about.
The tools we have right now are, like, even if they slow you down, right? If I was to use Claude today, it is likely that my productivity slow down because I'm still trying to figure out how to use it in a way that makes me productive. And Claude's capability itself may not be where it needs to be. However, the more I use it, the better it gets trained. And I do think, like, organizations can train employees to only such an extent. I think a lot of it has to be self-discovery. So I'm really glad that, you know, for example, they're just opening up Copilot for their employees to be able to use it. And sure, like, the best ones will probably find the best way to use it and they deserve to get promoted, while the others will, like, get promoted later. So I'm not surprised by the move. I agree that organizations probably need to, A, first unlock these tools. So if organizations haven't started giving their software developers access to AI tools, the organization as a whole was already going to start losing out. And then if you have unlocked these tools, and then I think some training is important, but I think it's more like give them an opportunity and time to play with it. And then, I also think
this is probably a forcing function for organizations so that employees are then forced to adopt AI tools. Because like you and I were just saying, there is an initial period which makes you uncomfortable, wherein in the short term, you will lose your productivity. So there is that initial inertia that you have to overcome. And maybe these policies will just help break that inertia among employees.
And like, I remember there was a point of time I had just gotten out of college, and VLOOKUP was like the most marvelous thing in the world that I'd ever seen. And before that, I was just like, how did I spend so many hours doing nonsensical work? So like, I like that, you know, that's become rudimentary skills and now we're in a whole brand new world.
Yeah, and actually reminds me of this recent article that I read by Josh Person, where he says all of us are prompt engineers. And that article, and we'll link that in show notes, Bandits, but that article also mentions how there has been an explosive growth in non-engineering jobs that require prompt engineering as a skill.
Not an option. Okay, Apoorva, with that, take us into our final topic.
All right, so our final story is something that is getting a lot of attention in Silicon Valley. Windsurf, a buzzy AI coding startup, was on the verge of being acquired by OpenAI for about $3 billion. But for various reasons, that deal fell apart, and what followed really shook the startup world. The company's founders and top talent jumped ship to Google DeepMind, licensing the IP for a reported $2.4 billion, while most of the team was left behind. The chief business officer became the CEO, and a few weeks later, Cognition AI swooped in and acquired the rest of the company for a much smaller stock-based deal, around $300 million. So now you have the situation where the original founding team made a really windfall exit, and early employees who helped build the company, who took the risk while joining the company, got far less than they should have. And that's really at the core of this controversy. It's a break from traditional startup social contract where big exits are supposed to reward the whole team and not just the founders.
It was very taken aback by the news. And I think there are multiple reasons it is raising red flags across Silicon Valley. So much so that investors like Vinod Khosla have come out strongly against it. He even said that he wouldn't fund the Windsurf founders again. And it's only fair, right? Like, there's a growing concern that if you have deals like these where you can pick just a certain layer of talent, it sets a very dangerous precedent. And this isn't an isolated case. We've seen this happen with Inflection and Scale AI. And if more examples like these start coming up, that the whole startup system breaks, right? Like social contract was always that if you go in with an early stage startup and if it got bought, the bounty would be split equally with everyone. So yeah, I was very unhappy with this news.
Yeah, on this one, I wholeheartedly agree with you. We're really seeing this shift with the three companies that we mentioned today. We're really seeing this shift we'll see more founders optimizing for personal upside over team equity. And it may just put the onus back on employees to ask tougher questions before joining a startup. So who controls the board? What happens in a partial acquisition? Is there any protection for early employees in the event of a founder-led exit? It's uncomfortable, but probably necessary. I hope we don't have to go down that path, and these deals, we don't see more of these deals, but if it does become the norm, I'm worried as it could seriously dampen the innovation and risk-taking at the earliest stages of a startup.
And I think that there are certain social contracts that aren't like real contracts, that you break them once and it damages. For example, like this reminded me of the whole open source contract, right? Like when you put out your code in the world, you don't owe anyone constant improvements because then you might as well be commercially selling it. And WordPress did it. Like they were open source. They were used by so many people. And the CEO and founder had a moment where he's just like, oh, I'm going to go after everyone who's made money off it and ask them to pay me. And he broke the open source contract, and that went to court. Now, the difference with open source is they have some kind of contract. And I wonder whether for the startup world, we need to start putting this into actual contracts versus them being like social contracts. But I genuinely think that if we have more of these cases, the whole concept of how startups work might break down. So hopefully we don't see more of these.
Yeah, I mean, a radical take I have is like, we should just blacklist startup, like the industry should just blacklist startup founders who do these things.
Well, I don't think you can do it because like Meta and Microsoft are culprits on the other end. So I don't know who will blacklist them.
Maybe the investors, if these founders go and, you know, look for funding for another company in the future. Anyway, with that, maybe Ankita, do you want to take us to the other three things that caught our attention?
Absolutely. So as always, here is more that you should know before we let you go. First, breaking the glass ceiling, Priya Nair is set to become HUL's first woman CEO in its 92-year history. While this is a landmark moment, it also highlights how far India Inc. still needs to go for gender parity in leadership.
And then there's quite cracking, the newest workplace trend where employees are hitting their breaking point by staying put. Think of it as quiet quitting's more intense cousin.
Obviously, we are not going to talk about the Coldplay incident. Enough has been said about that. But we are curious about what's happening at Dell. The company's Employee Net Promoter Score, the ENPS, a key metric for measuring employee satisfaction and loyalty, has plummeted to 32, down from 63 in 2023 and 48 last year. So it's almost a slash by half.
Reflecting at all our stories today, I just feel that there is so much happening. So many things are in flux. Again, we were finding ourselves at our wit's end trying to shortlist the top three things that stood out for us. It's been like July has been pretty interesting.
It's good because that's what keeps us in business, right? Like if the world over slowed down, we won't be rambling on this podcast more than we have today. So with that, Apoorva, get us out.
All right. On that note, I'm going to get us out of here. On behalf of NHRD and Ankita, this is Apoorva and we are out.
You're tuned in to the HR Bandit podcast, your one-way ticket to the latest and craziest in the world of work. In partnership with Timber Media, Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.